There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5. It's Midday Mobile and a Wednesday. Glad to have you here for a couple more hours of live vocal talk. You know how we do it around here. 56, 57 hours a week of live local shows. And a quick reminder, too, all those show up in podcast form as well. And you can grab those by going to wherever you subscribe for podcasts. I think we're probably on all of them out there. Or you can go directly to the website, fmtalk1065.com. Click the podcast tab. Or best yet, the first place that the podcast posts is the handy-dandy FM Talk 106.5 app that is free. Fantastic. Alliteration's coming to me today. Free and fantastic, and waiting for you for Apple folks over at the App Store, or if you are a Luddite like me and run an Android phone, it's Google Play, but either place, look for FM TALK 1065. No point between the 6 and 5, just FM Talk 1065. And then you'll see the logo there. That's us. Download the app and enjoy. You can stream the station, leave us talkback messages, check the show schedules, get those podcasts, our social media feeds, the traffic maps, the weather information, all that on the FM Talk 1065 app. So go out and grab it today. And as always, the Ascension Technologies text line open for you at 343-0106. Same thing for a phone call, 343-0106. All right, coming up on today's show, hour number two. Now, you hear him Wednesday nights here at FM Talk 106.5, my friend Cam Marston, and his show, What's Working. Well, last week, Cam Marston, who's like pretty fit dude, right? Pretty fit dude, guy in his 50s, works out, takes care of himself, watches what he eats and puts in his body, and had a stroke last week. It could have been really bad. He's going to come in to tell that story as a kind of a heads up and things to watch out for. He's doing that in the 1 o'clock hour. At 12:30 today, since Monday, we've been talking about the town of Rolling Fork, Mississippi. And I know there are multiple places in Mississippi that were affected by the tornadoes, as well as Alabama. I have friends and a longstanding, relationship with the town of Rolling Fork, Mississippi. And it was very scary for me when those tornadoes were going through there to kind of get on the phone and check with friends and then kind of get the real world of what was going on the ground there. And joining us today is the pastor of the Rolling Fork, First Baptist Church of Rolling Fork, Britt Williamson, joins us coming up around 12:35 on today's show. Leadoff batter is my friend and yours. He's with AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Cameron Smith joins us here on Midday Mobile. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, Sean.
Get into it. And normally, y'all, so Cameron and I talk about his, whatever the latest op-ed is over at AL.com. But today, and we'll talk about it where you can go read that. But I mentioned as I was closing out the end of Jeff's show and starting that you and I talked earlier before we went on. And the murder spree, the disgusting murder spree at Covenant in Nashville is not something that is just upsetting you from a distance, from the outside, like so many of us. This is your life. This is your people. Would you tell the folks about this, your connection with Covenant?
Yeah, so when I grew up as a kid, we went to Covenant Presbyterian Church. Ultimately, they moved to a new campus and started the school, the Covenant School. And so this is in my community. It's close by. It's very, very close to home. And then I got a text from my mom the morning after the shooting, And I did not recognize one of the victims' names because it was her married name. But it was my one of my third grade teachers, Miss Broyles. It was Cynthia Peake, whose name you see. And I recognized her face. I can still remember her voice. And man, Sean, I mean, something's wrong. Something's really, really wrong with us that this is happening. I understand the statistics. I understand the Second Amendment. I understand it all. But we just keep getting to a point where we hit a stalemate and then we move on because we're waiting for politicians to solve it. But we got to come up with some things that we can do to help reduce the occurrence of this type of tragedy. And honestly, it just boils down to caring about people, seeing something and helping people and saying, hey, I don't want this to continue. I don't want hurt people lashing out in violent ways where a lot of people end up dead.
You know, you and I have talked about this before, and the situation where everybody goes to their corners when something like this happens. And, you know, I called it, you know, I said within the day, if not the next morning, we'll hear from President Biden or Corinne Jean-Pierre or something, and it will be a quick pivot into a discussion of gun control. And so that's sure. Going to the corner. At the same time, folks like us, conservatives, will go into a corner and talk about the transgender part of it, which I think is fair, not because of transgender, but because of mental health issues. And I want to say first, I'm sorry for your loss, man. That's very close to home. It makes it even more visceral, I'm sure, than it. But it, you know, even for those of us that don't have the connection you do, there's babies dead. I mean, and the adults as well. Yeah. But I mean, I have a reaction to children that I should be better about having that same reaction, same level for adults. But just children that never get to live their life because some dirtbag, and I don't use a person's name, some dirtbag murderer, whatever condition, whatever trauma, whatever they're going through, they're a dirtbag murderer, goes in there and kills people. And you look at this situation and you have to ask, okay, yeah, is it a Second Amendment issue? I don't believe it is. Is it a mental health issue? I do think it is, but how do you, in a country of what, 358 million or whatever we are, how do you make sure the people that have these mental health issues that are violent are kept out and kept away from the children and other people? I mean, it sounds like Covenant did a lot of things right, you know, the security, but still, I mean, what we would think would be right, but was still breached. I said, changing hearts, I want to change. I mean, I'm with you. I want to change hearts too. You and I are very much the same on that. We're idealistic like that. I want to change hearts. I want to change minds. But in the meantime, I want to secure those places like we would secure our money. Because I tell you right now, those children, those teachers in there are worth more than any money.
Yeah. And I think the first thing is, it's okay to feel loss, and we should. And I think it's just become so easy for us when it's not in our backyard to sterilize the issue, make it a policy issue, make it about gun control or Second Amendment. But I mean, my son kind of just crushed me on this. He's 8 and he said, "Dad, I'm just sad." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "They were like me."
Uh-huh.
They were my age. Yeah. And it just, you know, our kids feel some of this in ways we've kind of numbed ourselves to, and we need to be honest about that. We need to realize that this is a big deal and also be consistent. We always seem to want our political class to solve it, and they are not very good at that. And there's little things like for everybody who has guns, which are my friends, my family, all of Alabama and the South, guns are everywhere. Make sure that they're stored properly, you know, put trigger locks on. I mean, do some of the basic things to make sure that we slow people down when they're hurt and angry and want to use this stuff. And everybody goes to, well, that wouldn't have stopped this thing. Well, there's a collection of things that can stop a lot of things. And that sort of basic is right there. But I deal with this issue in my own home in terms of we've done, as you know, and your audience knows, we're foster parents. We've done trauma training and things like that. I tell people, go learn this. Learn about what trauma looks like how you identify it, how you can support people going through it, because we keep acting like, well, what's the reason? What's happening here? Well, the profile of these mass shooters is very much the same, and there's a lot of research on it. It's basically people that have had trauma in early childhood of various kinds that goes unaddressed, and essentially they feel worthless. They, in many instances, become suicidal, and then they get in a situation where they start blaming other people for the way they feel, and then they get homicidal. But I mean, another way to look at the event that happened at Covenant is this is a suicidal individual who's committing homicide, because I don't think this person thought, hey, I'm going to seriously get out of this alive. And we need to realize how tragic, in spite of the names we want to call that person, how tragic it is that they got to a place where they could do that to kids.
Yeah. And look at some, compare two things, two of these tragedies, and what happened at Covenant, what happened at Uvalde. The difference that we saw at Covenant is Nashville PD and Officer Engelbert and Officer Colazzo, you know, doing, and the whole team there, they were the leads, but the whole team there did it right, and by the training, and what bravery, what, you know, I watched the body cam video and said, you know, what great training and the teamwork in going in there and doing it, the opposite of Uvalde. So that is different. What is the same is what you talked about. You have dirt bags in both of these situations. I'm sorry. I know that's unfeeling, but sure. I call them dirt bags. That in both of these situations, there were breadcrumbs, right? There were breadcrumbs to say, hey, shouldn't this person have been seen as maybe somebody to watch, something more intense. And I flipped it around on yesterday's show when the president quickly turned it into the gun control debate. And I'd go back to the question of red flag laws that the president and others seem to like so much. My fear is, I mean, there's an extreme scenario you can lay out for a person. I would agree they could be red flagged. My problem is the subjective part after that, who else gets red flagged. But if you're going to say that people that are, you know, like what President Biden had talked about and all that, where they had treatment for depression or go down the list of things and they could get red flagged and not be able to buy a gun, well, then where's the discussion of this person, right, this killer, who had been under treatment, going through all these things, and bought, I guess, a total of 7 firearms to that point? I mean, if... are they going to lump somebody going through transgender stuff in with red flag laws? I mean, I wonder what the left is going to say on that, what the gun control folks are going to say on that.
Yeah, I think the big issue here, and I understand it's not everyone else's responsibility to determine what's happening to other people. But when you know somebody's going through a tough time, whether it's a family member, a neighbor, a child, and you're aware that they're engaging firearms, even just a wellness check, right? Like, that's something that great police do all the time, is say, hey, you know, we're just kind of concerned. We just want to check on you. This doesn't require big red flag laws or all this bureaucracy. It does require you caring and saying, hey, we want to make sure everybody's safe. And that's eminently reasonable. And we need to kind of do that kind of stuff, not in a tattletelling sort of way, but in a, hey, we know things aren't okay. And we want to avoid a very, very dangerous situation. And those flags were actually there in this instance. The parents knew that this person had access to firearms and apparently said they thought that they had sold all the ones that they had. But it's just that level of follow-up of saying, we know somebody's having a tough time. We understand the interaction with firearms. I don't think it's a crazy anti-gun owner thing to say, hey, we just want to make sure folks are safe and that we don't have a potentially bad situation, because there are a lot of people right now that are really struggling, and I don't want government bureaucrats figuring it out. I want communities figuring it out and checking on their neighbors.
Yeah. And there's a lot to be said for that, but you know, we have been balkanized, right? As communities, you can be living next door to people that you have no interaction with. It's pretty common. You can have more in common with somebody halfway across the country, halfway across the world through social media or whatever, than you do with the person next door across the street.
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's the problem, right? We are together but isolated. We are in these crazy, wild social media worlds that are fantasy lands that create delusions. Mm-hmm. We need to have times. And I would just urge your listeners to do this. Find a time, whether it's the evening or the weekend, put down your phone, turn off your screens. It's spring. Go enjoy the outdoors. Introduce yourself to your neighbors if you haven't. Take them some food. That's what we do in the South. And just say, hey, I want to know you. And don't Google them first. Don't look them up on Facebook first. Just talk.
All right. People want to get read your latest op-ed, and I know you have more coming out about the tragedy, the murder spree at Covenant. How they find you online? How they get in the discussion?
You can find me at dcameronsmith on Twitter, al.com/opinion. A lot of different ways, but I really want y'all to join the conversation, especially in this area where it's tough.
Very tough. You're in my prayers as always, more than normal right now. And we'll talk again next week. Thank you, Cameron.
Thanks, Sean.
It's Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Coming right back, get to your text here. And a note about mental health from a friend of mine that has spent a lot of time in this world. We'll do that.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:25, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Coming up in about 10 minutes, pastor of the First Baptist Church in Rolling Fork that just saw, and not an overstatement here, utter devastation from the tornado. He's going to join us to talk about the situation on the ground and what he's telling members of his church and the people there in Rolling Fork. That's coming up in just about 10 minutes. I'll read you this text here. So from a friend of mine who knows a thing or two about mental health and working in the world of veterans that come home, or warriors that come home. He says this. He says, thank you, Nashville PD, for reacting to what has become one of our country's biggest nightmares. I'm not here to debate gun control. I'm a Second Amendment guy through and through, and you can't change my mind. Politicians have made this an easy button discussion of what they can affect just to tout that they were proactive. It's BS and reactive, and they haven't done a dang thing. I'm here to talk about the elephant in the room. That is the mental health pandemic our country is experiencing. If you or someone you know has ever thought about walking into a school to kill or harm kids, you have a mental health problem and should seek treatment. If you thought about going into a workspace and shooting or harming someone, you need help. A lot of younger folks won't remember this, but there was a time when we had mental health hospitals and we were able to treat mental illness from a clinical standpoint. These institutions were federally subsidized. Your insurance would pay for mental health treatment. The courts had stronger decision-making protocols that forcibly placed criminals into mental health institutions that deserved to be there, opposed to filling our jails. Sometime in the early 90s, they essentially phased away. I think we need to relook at these old programs and get the mentally ill off the streets. In my state of Alabama, we had Searcy Hospital, and it had satellite treatment centers that spread throughout southern Alabama. I would admit nationally those institutions had their fair share of problems with accusations of abuse and mismanagement. As a society, we should do better. We should advocate to bring back mental health hospitals. Call your local and state politicians to help stop sad days like this. And this is something that came up. Let me go to this text first, because Bill said, didn't Reagan strip mental health care funding from the state and federal budgets? We need a massive overhaul of our mental health care systems for the shootings, as well as the substance abuse and mental health care. We need a massive increase of the system. This should bring back asylums, which would help with homelessness. So two things here that Bill's saying. What was it? 1980 or so, there was the Mental Health Systems Act of 1980. That was signed by Jimmy Carter, not Reagan, but Jimmy Carter, that provided grants to community health care centers. Then in 1981, President Reagan, he pushed through an effort through Congress that repealed the majority of the MHSA of 1980. Now, when that finally came to our neck of the woods was really in the first term of Governor Bentley. And you remember this discussion when the state stopped funding mental health facilities. And that's when Searcy and so many others in the state shut down. Remember, at that point, the discussion was how much of this then became the responsibility of law enforcement and still is, where they have to deal with it, and they're not set up to do that. So there is a bigger discussion here of mental health care. And, you know, I don't know what goes on in other states, but I know in our state it was during the first term of Bentley. And we saw these places shut down. Is that the situation that led to the dirtbag murderer in Nashville? Could they have been helped? I don't know. I think there were some crumbs here, some red flags leading up to that person going into that school and murdering. But a great quote from a great friend of mine who knows a little something about it. Let's see. Summerdale Tony said, you don't see people outside their houses, kids, adults, anybody anymore. Yeah, there's a lot of that goes on. Tusker says signs were there were four several past shooters, including FBI radar. What now? Yeah, there's a lot to be asked. I mean, to say there's one thing that you can just do and fix this whole thing, I think is naive. That's for sure. All right, 1229 FM Talk 106.5. Pastor Britt Williamson joins us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1235, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. And we head to Rolling Fork, Mississippi. And I've been talked about Monday and Tuesday here, and talked to the senior pastor at First Baptist Church of Rolling Fork, Mississippi, Britt Williamson. Thanks for your time, and thanks for coming on with us, Pastor. You know, blessings on y'all. I mean, we're watching all through Mississippi the damage that was done, and even here in Alabama. But I look at the town of Rolling Fork that I know well, and I see the pictures, and I don't know what I'm looking at, Pastor.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I've had the same experience. Just getting around town, I missed my turn.
Yeah,
because you don't have those trees, those houses, those landmarks that you're used to saying, "Oh, here's my turn." it's the whole place is unrecognizable.
It is strange how much we depend on, we don't know it, but in our subconscious or conscious, the landmarks we look at to tell us where we are and where we're going. Another thing you and I talked about before we came on, this really resonated because I was talking to our friends in common there in Rolling Fork, and I've been telling the folks about how to make donations. We're gonna come back to that, that they have to mail it to Anguilla, Mississippi, which I told folks around here, it's just up the road from Rolling Fork, but there's a reason for that, right? Why can't we mail something to Rolling Fork?
Nobody has a mailbox. Even the most of the residential area was completely destroyed. So not only are the houses are destroyed, but even in the areas that weren't completely destroyed, lots of damage. There's trees down everywhere. And for me personally, my house had very little damage to talk about. But I have a 100-year-old oak tree on top of my mailbox. I saw my post guy running through town yesterday in his little postmaster truck. And I said, "What are you doing? How are you?" He said, "I'm trying to find a mailbox."
I mean, there's
nobody to give a mailbox to.
It's, and I know that, you know, y'all think mailboxes versus these homes destroyed, but it just shows how widespread the damage is. For those of us familiar with Rolling Fork, you know, talking with our friends in common, it seems like just from other than a fringe on the south side and a fringe up on the north side of Rolling Fork, everything else received massive amounts of damage. Is that fair to say?
Massive. I have 13 families in my church whose homes are completely destroyed. I have not even had time to count the ones that have received major damage, but, you know, we're able to get the tree off the house. We're able to tarp the roof. I haven't even counted that. It's just, you know, 13 families just in my church that have nothing, and they're just looking for a picture, you know, in the rubble.
Unbelievable. Also, looking at this, the blessings of this, because with the amount of destruction, and many people now have seen the video from over there, and I know what the town looked like beforehand, and I unrecognize how there wasn't just a big loss of life. Providence, I guess, Pastor. I don't know.
It's the grace of God. And last I heard, we had 23 confirmed deaths in the city, and my heart goes out to them. Two of them I knew, they weren't in my church, but my heart goes out to their families. You know, it'll be a long time before we can even do funerals. Praise the Lord, I didn't have any casualties in my church, but the thought of I should be doing 30 funerals this week, because everybody in my church was home at the time when this hit, and now they have no home left. And so how I'm not doing 20, 30 funerals or more this week is just, like you said, the providence of God just holding his hand on us as this thing came through.
Yeah, and I want to let folks know the vastness of this. The 23 discussed, Willem Forks, what, 1,500 people? I mean, it's not a big place.
No, the city itself, we have about 1,800. There are about 4,000 that live in Sharkey County. It's an agricultural place. But the thing is, when it left these residential neighborhoods, it turned north on Highway 61 and destroyed every business except the small grocery store. And thankfully, they were able to open back up Sunday. But there are businesses that they're in rubble. So all of our businesses are destroyed. Most of our houses are destroyed. And this thing was massive.
And this just, I guess, a side note here. You mentioned the grocery. Was it the Sunflower grocery store? Did it make it?
It used to be called Sunflower, but now they call it Stop and Shop.
Stop, okay.
And thankfully, they have damage, but they're able to operate. There's also a pharmacy called Rolling Fork Drugs inside of there, and they got back open. So thankfully, we have a little something going. But that's, to me, that I know of, we had a couple of CPA offices in town, they're destroyed. We have a couple of lawyer offices in town, they're destroyed. Our Ace Hardware lumber yard is destroyed. Chuck's Dairy Bar, which is known all over the country, if you've ever been to Rolling Fork, is completely destroyed. A Mexican restaurant's destroyed. Family Dollar's destroyed. It's just, all the small businesses we had in that corridor are gone.
Yeah, and what the pastor's talking about is like Chuck's Dairy Bar. That was one of the things that stood out to me after the coverage, and you talk about the miracle, and I thought about looking at the rubble there, how many times I sat in Chuck's Dairy Bar over the years, that some quick thinking to get people into the freezer there at Chuck's.
Right.
And
Miss Tracy, she's a great lady, and I still haven't had time to talk to her. I've been so busy, but just to hear her story and what they went through is just incredible.
Yeah, it is. By the way, side note, you probably have heard it many times. I heard from one of our friends in common, they found a menu from Chuck's Dairy Bar 100 miles away, dropped down in somebody's yard.
I've gotten the furthest report I've got is they found a picture, an old picture, 200 miles from here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. If you're just joining us, talking to Pastor Britt Williamson from the First Baptist Church of Rolling Fork, I want to talk about how we down here, because we know what it's like to get hit, and maybe not like y'all got hit for sure, but people here want to help out. And they do worry, Pastor, that, in times like this, that there's people that come out that take advantage of things. So that's why I like having a personal connection when I recommend things, and I have a personal connection to y'all. So tell folks down here in Mobile and Baldwin Counties, Northwest Florida, how they can help y'all.
Yeah, that's we've already got reports of some elderly people being ripped off of thousands of dollars. And that's really, really unfortunate. What we're committed to do as a church, for any funds that come to us, we're committed to steward them because it's God's funds, and we're going to be getting these funds to the neediest, to the people in our community. But we're going to be doing it with the love of Christ and loving them, encourage them. This is going to be a multi-year process of rebuilding and restoring things. And so we are very appreciative and thankful for people all across the country that are sending. But when they send it to us, there's no administration charge. We're going to be left there when everybody else leaves.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so we appreciate and need funds, I'm sorry, I thought you were going to say something.
No, Pastor, I just, so with that, and I've given, and I'll continue, you know, we can give the where to make the check to, and I have all the information here. I'll email it to people and been texting it to them as well. But yeah, it's you make it to the First Baptist Church at Rolling Fork. It's the tornado fund, right? Is that what they need to put on the check?
If they just put FBC Rolling Fork and send it there to our attention at the Bank of Anguilla, it will automatically be deposited into our tornado relief fund. So the bank is really being helpful to us because we have no way to receive anything right now at our church.
Yeah, because you don't have mail. There's no mailboxes. There's no post office. There's, let's talk brass tacks here for a second, too. And my time spent in the community, people here need to understand that you talk about people not having anything. There's a lot of people in the Delta in general, let alone in Rolling Fork, that didn't have much to begin with before this tragedy hit. They didn't have and probably didn't have insurance on things. They have no way to just have somebody stroke them a check and rebuild.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're one of the poorest regions of the country. Most of the housing in my area is housing that really people shouldn't have been living in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It was really just shanties, trailer parks. The trailers had been there for 30, 40, 50 years. And so these people were already poor, and now they lost what little they had. I mean, we have some, you know, neighborhoods that were actual houses. Most of those people will probably have insurance that will help them get back on their feet. But there's so many people in our area that were already living below the poverty line. They were already living with little to nothing. And now what little they had has been blown 200 miles away.
You know, and you say something real important, too, how y'all will still be there. And I watched that, you know, living on the Gulf Coast, and we realized that, you know, hurricane comes in and you have all the news attention and all that for a few days afterwards.
Right.
And then the public, you know, attention goes elsewhere. But the problems remain and the rebuild remains. And, yeah, Ed, this is something y'all are going to deal with a long time. It's not, you know, even when the news cameras go away, doesn't mean the problem goes away. So this is a long effort.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. You know, we have immediate needs, food and shelter and things like that we've helped people with. But when all of the, and I've already seen it, let me back up. In the front lawn of my church, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, looked like a tailgate party at a football game. There were tents up. There were people cooking everywhere. And today there's nobody.
Wow.
We have, you know, several organizations in town, Samaritan's Purse, Baptist Disaster Relief, Mercy Meals, but they are only committed to stay with us 4, 6, 8 weeks. And so what we're trying to do is any funds that we accrue from people giving across the country, we're going to use that, and we're still going to be here. We're not going to pack up and go to the next disaster. We're not going to leave after the cameras leave. We're going to be here.
You know, I say a testament to you and your congregation, because on Sunday, did I read this correctly, that y'all had services on Sunday?
We did. We just felt as a leadership in the church that it was important for us to open our doors, not just to our people, but to the community. Because a lot of people have lost hope. They've lost everything, and they lost hope. And we wanted to give them a place to come and have a reminder that our true hope is not in this earth. It's not in this world. It's our hope that we have in Jesus. And we were able to worship, pray. A lot of people don't get to see what I see as a pastor when I stand up on a platform. There were people there that don't go to our church. There are people that probably never go to church. But when I stood up to preach my sermon, I saw several families that were there that had lost everything. And so that was really important to us, to give people an opportunity to come in and be reminded about our hope in Jesus, and that God never leaves us. He never forsakes us. He's going to be here with us through the valley of shadow death. He's not going to put us in the valley and leave us. So that was important to us. And honestly, I've been a pastor now for 17, 18 years, and that was probably one of the most powerful services I've ever been in.
I imagine as well. But the effort through you and the church and others going forward is going to resonate as well as people rebuild their lives. The people that have lost their homes, are they finding shelter nearby, or are people gone to Jackson, or where are people staying?
We have two shelters set up in Rolling Fork. We've got a shelter set up in Leland, which is about 40 miles north of us. We have 114 families that are in hotel rooms in Greenville, Mississippi, about 45 miles north of us. Some individual, I don't even know who it was, paid for 5 nights of their hotel stay in Greenville at all these hotels. They're up there with nothing but the clothes they had on when the tornado hit, and they have nothing to go back to. And so today that will run out, and we're going to have to figure out how we can shelter them, because the shelters that are set up are already full.
Wow. Well, that's more reason for people to contribute to an effort on the ground there. One folks can trust. And once again, I'll give people the address. I can send it to them directly, but make the checks to FBC, right? Rolling Fork?
First Baptist Church, Rolling Fork, or FBC, Rolling Fork. Send it to the bank at that P.O. box, and if they put a tent in First Baptist, Rolling Fork, they're putting it straight into our tornado relief fund that we've set up. And it's like you say, we're going to need it for years. It's going to be a long time.
Well, I'm going to reach out to you here in the weeks to come and the months to come to check up on what's going on. And you've got my phone number as well. When you need things, let us know. And you got a lot of people down here on the Gulf Coast that are worried about y'all in the Delta, and they want to help. And I hope that it's going to be a long process, but we make it faster, with help from elsewhere.
Thank you. Let me say one more thing. I know about hurricanes. I'm originally from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I was in Hattiesburg when Katrina came through. And so this is not as widespread as Katrina. But if you remember the pictures of the Mississippi Gulf Coast when Katrina came through, that 20, 30-mile section where it hit first, that's what my city looks like.
It is. It's a daunting effort to rebuild from that. We know it was done in the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and I know it will be done in Rolling Fork. It's just not going to happen overnight. But Pastor Williams, it's going to take a lot of work, but you got a lot of people behind you and people that want to help, and I sure appreciate it. And I'm going to reach back out to you and get an update.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Please do. I'd be glad to join you anytime.
Absolutely. Big thank you to Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church of Rolling Fork, Mississippi, Britt Williamson. If you need more information on how to help, I've got all the information here, so you can hit us up on the text line at 343-0106. I can send that info to you there, or you want to send an email to me, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. We'll get you that as well. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, 1257, FM Talk 1065, Midday Mobile. I got a lot of people asking here for information for where to send the check to in Rolling Fork. People asking on the text line, give me a little bit of time here. If I don't get it to you by the end of the show after 2 o'clock when I get out there, I will send you all that information. Same thing on email there. But it's one of those situations where I feel good. I know these people. And, while there's scamsters out there, when you have personal connections with people, you know how to help out. And people that are there, they're not fly-by-night. People live in the community there to help out those great folks in the Mississippi Delta. All right. So many texts to get to as well. This text from my heart goes out to the people of Rolling Fork. To have something turn up 200 miles away is like taking it from a Mobile and dropping it in Dothan. Yeah, that photograph that the pastor talked about. I know that, Chuck's Dairy Bar, which is like downtown Rolling Fork, like the center of Rolling Fork, to have its menu from that place found 100 miles away. Sexer says, praise the Lord for this pastor. Thank you for having Pastor Williamson on. Lord Jesus, be with the community. And, I'll get you more address information. That's a tough thing, too. I mean, you could say it's true in so many places, but the level of poverty in the Mississippi Delta is something. I know we have it through other areas of the South, other areas of the North and West and East, but it's something. So those folks didn't have anything to begin with and truly have less than that now. So what we can do as communities to help out, that's what we do in the South, right? And maybe they do it elsewhere, but I just know about here. That's what we do. All right, coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. You know him from his show, What's Working, Cam Marson, author, speaker, radio show host, podcaster. Pretty darn fit guy, young guy. And last week, I get a heads up that he had a stroke. So we'll talk about that with him when we come back and what the signs were and what has him sitting in here in the studio just fine. There you go, what, 10, 12 days later. Coming right back.